Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
You are back on America This Week. I'm joined this week, this is Tim Reedy, by Kevin Clark, my colleague. And Kevin's going to lead us off again and bring back Beth Kenobi, our guest.
Yeah, thanks for staying with us, Beth, and everyone else in the audience. Sure. And if you want to call in and ask Beth a question, please do at 1-888-322-8465. We are ready to hear from you. And Beth, I see in your resume that when you're not writing books, you are... It's called a relationship manager with Catholic Relief Services.
Yes.
I think that says something about your life. Because is there, as an intentional single person, is there more relationship management required? Because I'm a married man with four children. My relationships are kind of shoved in my face every morning when I get up. So as much as I might want to take a break from several of them on a given day, I can't. So is it? Do you have to do more work, do you think, to manage relationships or nurture them, I guess, than married people do? Or
yeah, you know, I think, you know, when you look at the nuclear family, you know, mom, dad, kids, those relationships in some way are automatic. You know, I'm really grateful to have grown up, you know, in a normally not dysfunctional family. You know, we always had our share of fits and fights, but, you know, loving
parents. Oh, I pray my children will say that one day.
Married for over 40 years. I mean, it's wonderful. But, you know, I remember when my sisters and I used to fight, my mom would say, you will be sisters forever. You don't have a choice. so you know, fix your arguments, get over it now, because you are sisters for life. And it was that understanding that there was no breaking up. And so I think there is something wonderful about family, even when it is kind of in your face all the time, and we know how to push our buttons because we helped install them.
We built them
for one another.
Yes.
And so I do find that with the relationships that I have with my friendships, with the women that I'm in prayer group with my faith community, with my colleagues at work and my extended colleagues through our diocesan and university partnerships that I work with, you know, those relationships do take a lot of work because we don't take vows in friendship. And I always love to tell the story about my best friend and her husband. I've been friends with them for 10 or 12 years, and I can point to very specific moments in our friendship where things have strengthened and deepened, and often those have been moments of real vulnerability, being with one another in moments of crisis. But I also remember the day that their daughter, their oldest daughter, was born, and they called and asked me if I would be her godmother. And I kind of gasped, and I said, "Are you sure? are you sure you really want to give me this responsibility?" And they said, "Absolutely, because we want our daughter to have your influence in her life, and your faith, Beth, your faith, to be an influence in her life. But we also need you in our marriage. You know, we need your help and your presence as a guide to us of how to have a happy and holy and healthy family life." And it was one of those moments where I felt like if there was any filter left in our friendship, it was completely dissolved. And we have an open door policy at each other's homes. We have keys to each other's houses. You know, it's this wonderful friendship, but I'm always reminded that has taken years and years of work, and there are probably many single people who don't have those kind of relationships. And I've been very blessed to have the kind of friendships in my life where there is such openness, even without the kind of vows that one would have in a marriage or that are often assumed in families, because family is forever, at least, you know, gratefully in the home that I grew up in. Family is forever. So relationships are work. You know, it takes a lot of time to set expectations and lay that framework of trust and honesty and support and being there for one another.
Now, you talk in your book a bit about, you know, what role the church can play. And, you know, I imagine there are some people out there who feel like the church is very focused on the family, on marriage, on couples. How, you know, in a given parish community, how do we welcome people who come from the single life?
Yeah. You know, the one thing I always say, and, you know, I say it to my own pastor all the time, be careful of the language that you use. And because oftentimes I think it's easy for pastors or church staffs to talk to their largest demographic, which is often couples and families and school children, especially if you've got a school connected, but to use language in a way that invites everyone. And to remember that singles come in all ages and stages of life. I had a pastoral associate tell me a story one time of an older woman who loved every year she and her husband would come to the Valentine's Day dance. And the year that woman lost her husband and she went to the pastoral associate and said, "Oh, I'm just going to miss not being able to come to the Valentine's Day dance." And the woman was like, you know, the woman on staff was like, "Well, why aren't you coming?" And she said, "Well, I'm single now. I can't come." And it really helped them as a parish staff say, "Well, is this an event for couples or is this a celebration of everyone in our community?" So to really think about, you know, who's invited, and if it truly is a community celebration, how do we invite people in such a way that whether it's, you know, young singles, young couples, older couples, even our widows and widowers know that if it truly is a community celebration, that all are welcome.
Do you know of any parishes that are doing a good job that we can point to as examples of a community, a church community that is reaching out to all the components within the community?
Well, you know, I'm speaking to a national audience, so I would say, you know, look in your local community and look for those places that are vibrant and that have activities for people of all ages. But to, you know, to also consider, you know, I think about opportunities for prayer and for worship are things that I would hope that you find people of all ages and stages in life there and celebrating those things. I remember being at a parish once and a single woman was lamenting, "There's nothing here for singles." And sometimes I think it's important to have opportunities now and again that are specifically for single people to talk about the joys and challenges of the single life. But more often, it's more important for people to know when something is open to everyone. Opportunities for Bible study and adult catechesis, faith formation events. And even thinking about, you know, there are sometimes, you think about sacramental moments that often we think about that in the context of family, baptism, First Communion, First Reconciliation, marriage. But are there opportunities there for single people to be a part of the catechesis or the planning or some of the behind-the-scenes work that is so important to making those sacraments smooth and to go well in terms of hospitality and welcoming? I think there's a place for singles in every aspect of parish life.
It sounds like parishes could use their own relationship managers to make sure these, you know, that you do. Because, you know, as a parent, I know that it seems like, and I'm not going to name my parish, but it does seem like I have a natural connection with these various sacramental moments that they do. They seem to me, now that Beth's mentioning it, I have to say they seem very tightly focused on the family and the child and with not much opportunity to draw the rest of the community in to share in it. I mean, we look at ourselves as a church family. We should be trying to include all the members of the family.
Yeah. Well, and I even use sometimes a very simple example, you know, the ushers on Sunday morning who will tap the family of four sitting in the middle pew to bring up gifts, because all they have to do is tap one person on the shoulder and they have enough people to bring up all the gifts. You know, it might take a little more effort, but to tap four individual single people, four individual people who are there without a partner, and to sometimes consider too that I think, you know, in our day and age, we find a number of people who come to church by themselves, even married people who, you know, perhaps because of family and work and job obligations, may not be able to come to Mass together, because of interfaith relationships. Perhaps a husband and wife go to separate churches on Sunday morning, or one goes to church and the other does not.
It's a complicated world out there.
It is a very complicated world. And are we welcome to people who, you know, may be married but coming to church alone?
That's an excellent point.
For whatever life circumstance, and I think that's a place where an understanding of the single life and the dynamic of a single person in a parish is an important perspective to keep in mind.
And I think it's important to note too. Often we say, and I'm guilty of this too, like, if only my parish did more for this community. Well, that parish includes us, includes me, includes my family. Mm-hmm. So we're all called mm-hmm. upon. If we feel like there's a gap here, if a need is not being met, you know, maybe we're called to, like, invite single people into our home, into our families, to say, you know, come to dinner, you know, join us.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everybody's going to, you know, they're not going to invite themselves. You know, you have to reach out. So it's mm-hmm. it requires an effort on both ends.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book, the entire book is based on all these different myths, you know, the false myths and perceptions that people have about singles. And one of the myths I talk about is that being singles are selfish, that being single is a selfish way to live. And really the antidote to that is a good sense of stewardship. And there can be this perception that singles are selfish because, you know, my time is my own, and I get to decide how I'm going to spend my time and my money and my energy. But I think the spiritual principle beneath that is, am I being a good steward of all the gifts that God has given me in terms of how I spend my time, the way I choose to balance my work life and my friendships and my personal life, my engagement with my family and my friends, my being a good steward of the treasure that I've been given, both in terms of financial resources and time resources. And I think sometimes it comes back to that word intentional. Like, we have to be very intentional about being good stewards of all that we've been given. And sometimes I think in order to overcome that perception of being single, sometimes we really do need to put ourselves out there, in front of our faith communities or our friends to say, I want to offer my life as a gift to other people. And how does our prayer lead us to make those decisions, and how do our friends and faith community hold us accountable to that?
How well are you able to explain this? It seems to me, maybe I'm just projecting what my mother's like. Sorry, Mom. Do you have a lot of explaining to do to family members, or pushback from family members to make this sensible to them? This commitment and this difference.
I think, again, I'm very blessed and very lucky. I think the only tenuous conversation that my mother and I ever had was one time she came to me and told me that she had had a conversation with our pastor back home about, you know, why I wasn't married, and he assured her
Lord.
That I was, and I was like, oh no.
Nothing good comes of
he's
a sentence that begins, I had a conversation with your pastor.
He's a wonderful, wonderful man. But, you know, I think, you know, when I think about this, and again, you know, this taking it back to prayer, I think what God desires for all of us is that we know how much God loves us and only wants the best for us. And that, you know, that one of the ways that's affirmed is a deep, deep sense of joy. And to know that our lives are loving and life-giving for the world. And I think for my own parents, there was a hope. I think, you know, many parents hope to see their children get married and have families of their own. And, you know, the more I shared with my parents how much joy I found in ministry, how much joy I found in the mission work that I've had a chance to do the amount of joy that I found in my friendships and sharing those friendships with my family. I think what my parents want is for me to be happy, and I do think that's what most parents genuinely want. And sometimes there is this misperception or parents pushing on their children their idea of what happiness and a fulfilled life looks like, which for, again, for them might be projecting marriage, projecting grandchildren. But I think, you know, it's important to remember that our lives are each our own, and to encourage, for parents to encourage their children to live a life that brings glory and honor to God and the person God has called each one of us to be, and that might look a little different than what a parent first anticipated.
Well, again, the book is Party of One, Living Single with Faith, Purpose, and Passion, and our guest has been Beth Kenobi. And I know you have a website, Beth, so let our listeners know how they can learn more about you and follow your writing.
Sure. So I do a little bit of blogging. My website is www.bethkenobi.com, BethKnobbe.com. And Valentine's Day is right around the corner, so that's on my list of writing to do this weekend, is to have a blog post up for ways for singles to celebrate Valentine's Day, which is just a quick 10 days away.
Well, perfect timing. So we encourage our listeners to look at Beth's website, and we want to thank Beth again. And we're looking now, we're going to be speaking in our next segment with Judith Valente, who's talking about some of the writing she's done for us about the gun violence in Chicago. You are listening to America This Week. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.